It is 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hour of Slack, which for quite some time now has been presented at this time, has moved, and I think it's been moved to Thursday. Offhand, I would presume Thursday at 3, but I'm not sure of the start time. Once again, Hour of Slack has been moved on the free radio schedule, and this is the newly expanded Mideast Madness, now going for an hour and 55 minutes.
بتسقيني بعض ضحك الصفصافات بسليكي بتسليني قالت لي حول وارتاح وكانك بتحب الملاح آدم لو لم نتفاح ما كان عرمش عديني تريريريريرام يا من سواك بالهوى ما لي سبيل مر على عيني يرضي الطياب السبيل عمدناك إسابي أنت وأنا يفنى الهوى منا بعدنا غرامك مهجتي وعطفك سبيلي وعلى ربعك أنا جعل سبيلي لأجلك هجرت أهلي والصحاب يا عين يا عين يا عين يا عين يا عين تاني
Yes, folks, that is that is the voice of was the voice of Danny Thomas to many people. Now today he you may have heard an echo of his like, and a lot of you have not heard of Danny Thomas. The thing is, if I can find the right page here, Danny Thomas did perform widely for the Arab American community. Although this record, which is from 1952, is his only recording of Arab music, at least his only surviving recording of Arab music. The proceeds from the record, as well as from the numerous haflas, or Arab parties, presented by Thomas, benefited St. Jude Hospital Foundation, which has become one of the most important institutions in the world for the research and treatment of children's diseases. Known by mainstream America only as a comedian and actor, Thomas continued to sing Arabic songs in cameo and guest performances until just a few months before his death in 1991. He had a show on TV called Make Room for Daddy with his beautiful wife and his two beautiful children and another family-oriented sitcom. I thought it was funny back in those days. Make Room for Daddy, played by Danny, D-A-N-N-Y, Thomas. Well, for those of you who've started listening before the music began, yes, the new start time for Mideast Madness is 1500 hours Pacific Standard Time. It is now 3:12. And being the eve of the traditional highest profile Christian holiday, at least for the general public, Christian or non, I thought it would be appropriate to read you Colonizing Christmas. This is from the International Middle East Media Consortium. Colonizing Christmas, Facts on Israeli Occupation and Bethlehem. This was presented by the Palestine News Network on December 15. PLO Negotiations Affairs Department issued their latest fact sheet entitled Colonizing Christmas, Facts on the Israeli Occupation in Bethlehem. And here is what they have presented. Bethlehem is a vivid example of the severe and appalling effects that Israeli colonization policies have had in Palestine. Illegal confiscation of land, expulsion of Palestinian families, and ongoing construction of Israeli settlements are few of countless stories that can be heard from the inhabitants of Palestine in general and Bethlehem in particular. And let me, Ren, I am Ren Tawil, specify for those who are not sure or just plain don't know, Bethlehem is outside of Israel proper, which means outside the Green Line, on the roughly east side of the Green Line. In Bethlehem lies in militarily occupied Palestinian land, not legitimately part of Israel. Returning to the article, effectively, Israel has sought to change the demographic and geographic composition of the occupied Palestinian territory, particularly in occupied East Jerusalem, by taking as much land and as many natural resources as possible with as few Palestinians as possible for the benefit of the illegal colonial enterprise. Israeli settlements and Bethlehem. Since the Israeli occupation of 1967, Israel has employed several policies to annex important areas of the Bethlehem district. So the Bethlehem has had most of its northern land stolen by Israeli settlements. And remember now, these are illegal Israeli settlements, illegal according to international law, the United Nations protocols, and the Geneva Convention. Since 1967, some of the largest illegal settlement projects, which dramatically increased after the Oslo Accords in 1993, have been carried out in and around occupied East Jerusalem, particularly between Bethlehem and occupied East Jerusalem. Currently, there are 22 Israeli settlements established on Bethlehem's land, including Gilo, Givat Hamatos, and Har Homa to the north, Tekoa and Nokdim, which is where the Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman lives, to the east, Efrata and Navi Daniel, where Israeli Public Diplomacy Minister Yuli Edelstein lives, to the south, as well as Har Gilo and Betar Elite to the west, effectively turning Bethlehem into an open-air prison. In Bethlehem's northern area, including Beit Jala and Beit Sahur, Israel has illegally confiscated around 22,000 dunams of land. That's roughly 22 square kilometers, roughly the size of the country of Nauru. And I believe Nauru is an island in the Pacific Ocean. I guess it's a large island of the very many, many small ones that are in the Pacific Ocean. From the 22,000 dunams that have been confiscated, Israel illegally annexed 18,000 dunams to the so-called Jerusalem Municipality, which Israel has been unilaterally expanding since 1967. This confiscated land was used to expand the illegal settlements of Gilo, Givat Hamatos, and Har Homa. The illegal wall has effectively annexed 4,000 dunams of land belonging to Bethlehem itself. Focus on the northern entrance, Gilo, Givat Hamatos, and Har Homa settlements. The network between Har Gilo, Kremisan Wall, Gilo, Givat Hamatos, and Har Homa settlements will effectively isolate Bethlehem from Jerusalem. This network could potentially expand to the eastern Bethlehem area, stopping any possible growth of Bethlehem towards the Jordan Valley and Dead Sea, all within the state of Palestine. Now, that's the state of Palestine, as is now identified and defined by the Palestine Liberation Organization and the Palestinian Authority, which is to say, not including the 78% of historic Palestine, which is now the state of Israel. Returning to the article, some of the Israeli announced plans for the settlements of Gilo, Givat Hamatos, and Har Homa are hotels that will eventually benefit from the proximity to Bethlehem, as well as enjoying a perfect view of the city. While the hotels will be located on Bethlehem's land, they will be used for the business of colonization and benefit of illegal Israeli settlers rather than for the benefit of the rightful landowners. This move will dramatically affect Palestinian hotels in Bethlehem and East Jerusalem. Most of the affected landowners are Palestinian Christians from Bethlehem, Beit Jalal, and Beit Sahur, in addition to churches from various denominations. The, quote, permit regime and Israeli attacks on Palestinian freedom of worship. The Israeli occupation policy of separating and isolating different Palestinian communities has divided historic communities in a very intensive manner. In particular, the wall and the imposition of a racist permit regime have further intensified the disconnection between Bethlehem and Jerusalem. The permit regime requires Palestinians who do not reside in Jerusalem to obtain a security permit in order to cross from one side to the other. This includes Christian and Muslim religious authorities, women, elderly, and youth. Let me break away for a moment. I just had a thought. You may encounter in my readings a pause between paragraphs or between sentences that you think is a tad too long of a pause. Forgive me for that. It's not entirely from some aspect of illiteracy that you might believe I suffer from. I do make it a point to pause between paragraphs so you can soak all this in, give it some thought. This article, Colonizing Christmas, from the Palestine News Network. It is called the Palestine. Yeah, there it is. Palestine News Network, PNN. See, I lost my train of thought. See how easy it is to do that? This report from PNN. It's full of the names of, you know, the Hebrew names of settlements and also Arabic names of villages and towns. So please bear with me as we plow through those. Returning to the report. Demanding that Palestinians from Bethlehem apply for permits to enter occupied East Jerusalem is an additional legal measure taken by Israel in order to consolidate its unilateral and illegitimate annexation of occupied East Jerusalem. To improve its international image, Israel markets a number of permits to Palestinian Christians during Easter and Christmas. They present it as a goodwill gesture and sign of cooperation, although Palestinians are required to ask for permits from the occupying power to go from one side of their own country to the other, not to a different country. Regardless of this fact, not everyone who applies for permits gets them. For example, in April 2011, 15,000 Christian Palestinians applied for a permit to enter occupied East Jerusalem. But Israel only issued around 2,500 permits. Out of 15,000 requests for permits, 2,500 were issued. And those were Christian Palestinians, folks. Returning, Israel also issues permits randomly, often to one or two members of a family. This results in permits not being used as families who opt to stay together are forced to celebrate at home. Palestinian ID holders who do obtain permits are only allowed to enter Jerusalem through three of the 14 military checkpoints that encircle the occupied city. These checkpoints are limited to pedestrians, thus causing long, uncomfortable delays. In and around Bethlehem, there are 32 physical barriers erected by Israeli occupation forces, the IOF, including checkpoints, roadblocks, dirt mounds, and gates. I'm going to read that again. In and around Bethlehem, the town of Bethlehem, there are 32 physical barriers erected by Israeli occupation forces, including checkpoints, roadblocks, dirt mounds, and gates. International reports have echoed this situation. The European Union Heads of Mission Report on Jerusalem 2012 found that, quote, the government of Israel selectively enforces legal and policy restrictions on religious freedoms and access by Christian and Muslim religious worshipers to their holy sites located in Jerusalem and the Old City of Jerusalem throughout the year. End quote. The majority of Palestinian Christians in Palestine live between occupied East Jerusalem and the Bethlehem district. As of 2007. Latest developments, Kremesan and Mar Elias, or Givat Hamatos, which is the Hebrew name for the settlement there, the illegal settlement at Mar Elias in Kremesan. For more than a year, Palestinians for Beit Jalal have conducted special prayers to save their land from further annexation. After having lost almost 70% of their land to the Israeli settlements of Hilo and Gar Hilo, Israel plans to build a wall, another wall, folks, that will separate them from one of the last green areas of Bethlehem, the Kremesan Valley. The valley Israel plans to take is owned by 58 Palestinian Christian families, as well as by churches. It lies between Israeli settlements of Hilo and Har Hilo, including the planned settlement of Givat Yael. More than half of Beit Jalal's olive trees are located at Kremesan. The town's olive oil is considered one of the finest in Palestine. A Catholic kindergarten run by Salesian nuns will be heavily affected by the Israeli plans, while a Catholic seminary and the winery run by Salesian Brothers, which employs workers from Beit Jala, Arab workers from the Arab village of Beit Jala, will be left at the western side of the wall. Israel expects to resume construction during the early months of 2013. If the wall is built, Palestinians from the Bethlehem area will lose one of its most precious traditions. During the last days of May, the Roman Catholic community conducts a procession from the statue honoring the Virgin Mary at Kremisan to the Church of the Annunciation in Beit Jala. Stick with me here. There's not much to go. Mar Elias, or the Givat Hamatos settlement now. Mar Elias is one of the holiest Christian places in Palestine. It is where the Christmas procession to Bethlehem begins every year. Though historically it has always been part of Bethlehem, Israel restrictions have made the church off limits to Palestinian Christians seeking to pray in the area. The land surrounding Mar Elias is owned mainly by churches and Palestinian Christian families from Bethlehem. Although most of it has been illegally confiscated by Israeli occupation authorities for the expansion of Israeli settlements, Givat Hamatos settlement becomes the link between the settlements of Gilo and Har Homa, cutting off Bethlehem from Jerusalem and threatening a holy place located at the historic Jerusalem-Hebron Road. Thousands of settlement units were announced between 2011 and 2012. A number are considered to be a retaliatory measure against Palestine's UN bid, the one that they did this year, a month or two ago. And that's a total of 2,610 units. I'm going to read that again. Thousands of illegal settlement units were announced between 2011 and 2012. A number are considered to be a retaliatory measure against Palestine's or the Palestinian Authority's United Nations bid for membership as a non-state observer status. That's a total of 2,610 units, divided into three plans. A, with 2,610 units, B, with 549 units, and C, with 813 units, the southern part of Givat Hamatos begins at the Tantur area, historically part of Beit Jala, the Arab village, while the northern area reaches Talpiot in West Jerusalem. If implemented, this settlement would have a similar effect to the E1 expansion of Ma'al Adumin settlement. It would further isolate occupied East Jerusalem, turning Palestinian communities into walled Bantustans by completing the southern West Bank Bantustan. That's the end of the Palestine News Network report entitled Colonizing Christmas. This information is available on the World Wide Web at imemc.org/article/64747, or perhaps just go to imemc.org and enter Colonizing Christmas. That might get you there, too. Lots of other fascinating stuff, I'm sure. Okay, that's the report, and I'm going to give you the phone numbers now. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org and broadcasting in a very limited fashion on 101.3 on the FM spectrum. 101.3 FM. I'm going to give you the phone numbers now. And those I don't even know what I'm doing here. Okay, both of these lines go directly to the studio and received by me, and you'll go right onto the air if you call. Area code 831 here in Santa Cruz County, California, USA, 427-3772. Again, that's 427-3772. And line two is same area code, 831-469-3119. 469-3119. Let me do a couple of plugs here. Free Radio Santa Cruz needs a new studio. Our requirements, perhaps with varying degrees of flexibility, are it's got to be near downtown, if not in downtown Santa Cruz. It must have 24-hour access for our 24/7 broadcast service. It's got to have a bathroom. We need something more or less 150 square feet. And we cannot go above $300 a month for rent, because the current rent, which is close to double of that in our current studio, is killing us financially. We were, you know, this past weekend, we in the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective were counting on an opportunity to sell T-shirts and take donations on Pacific Avenue, but we got totally rained out, as you locals are quite aware. That was very rainy, and it simply didn't happen. Even God hates us, I guess. Well, at any rate, that's, you know, that problems like that certainly don't help us. I mean, I'm sure we'll be out on the street eventually anyway, selling T-shirts and educating the public about the value of free radio. That $300 or less a month hopefully will include utilities, would provide a secure, dry location for us, appropriate for a radio studio, and we prefer to pay no parking tax. Again, Free Radio needs a new studio near downtown with 24-hour access in the bathroom. 150 square feet. Folks, please help us out. If you have any ideas where we might find something like that for our programming purposes, call me on either of those two studio numbers I gave, 427-3772 or 469-3119, or get in touch via send an email to frsc@freakradio.org. And of course, we, in this time of giving and receiving and more giving and the joy of giving, desperately need your donations. We do not get heavy-duty grants from corporations. Our own charter prevents us from getting most of those kinds of grants and gifts. Keep Free Radio on the air. As a programmer, I pay something every month, and all the other programmers, all the other people who do shows are required to pay too. They don't pay me, I pay them. Contribute as often and as much or as little as you can. Our dues do pay the rest. Please pay as soon as possible. And send your donations to FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Post Office Box 7811 Santa Cruz, S-A-N-T-A, second word, C-R-U-Z, in California. Zip 95061. Okay, back to the show, as it is already 3:36. I requested the expansion of time for this show because, for me, it just gets shorter and shorter, going from 4 to 4:55 just doesn't cut it for my purposes, and I figured it wouldn't hurt to expand the opportunity for listeners to hear the show, too. I think I have some comments on the report from the Palestine News Network. The situation in and around Bethlehem is exemplary of what Israel has done in all of its territory, both the occupied, militarily occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza, and even though Israel vacated Gaza proper and withdrew the settlements in the Gaza Strip in 2005, they and the Israeli occupation forces are still making life very difficult for the Gazans. Supposedly, you know, they justify this because of the terrible missiles that have killed some 20 people, I believe, at least in the last couple of years, up to 20, 21 people, Israelis. But if people had any idea of the circumstances in the Gaza Strip now and how the blockade creates an economic siege, even the air and sea lanes are closed to Gaza. I've been there, I've seen it myself, folks. So even though Gaza is not experiencing occupation by Israel from the inside, it is still, according to international law, United Nations law, considered occupied because of the pressure created by the blockades on its border and the severe restrictions of things and people going, leaving the Gaza Strip or coming in. So that's still an occupation, both legally and in realistic terms. And as I was saying, Israel has been pulling stuff like this off since 1967, the war there in June of 67. And, you know, it all began with the settlements, the Jewish settlements in the occupied territories. And what I mean by, whenever you hear the term illegal settlements, refers to international accords, international law, which specifies that militarily occupied land, generally following a battle there, regardless of who won, is not to be, well, okay, the victor in such battles, who maintains an army of occupation, such as America had in Berlin and Japan following World War II. But in the case of the Palestine territories, they are not to be populated by civilians for the sake of establishing and growing civilian communities. That's what they mean when they say illegal settlements. Many Israelis refute this claim of illegality, and what they're talking about, of course, is either the imposition of Israeli governmental law on those territories, according to their immediate Israeli government, the conquerors, or they base it on the promises of God as they interpret it from the Talmud, the Torah, the Old Testament, as Christians would call it, which, of course, although revered by many peoples in many countries around the world, does not establish a criteria for international law. So that's what they mean by illegal settlements. And Israel does indeed toss off a lot of the criticism. They, in exchange for the UN's acceptance of Israel as a member state back in 1948, and the recognition that came from the United States, the Soviet Union, and many other countries, Israel, and the way I put it, has been spitting in their face ever since then, because the UN has also issued, in the interim, a number of censures and sanctions, political punishments, which don't really amount to much, pragmatically speaking. Sanctions and censorships against Israel for their treatment of the Palestinians and for the way how they simply toss off international law. Israel is very much on its own agenda. It's called political Zionism. And Zionism, as was once held to be the case by the United Nations, is a racist activity and a racist philosophy. Yes, the UN did rescind that immediately following the first Gulf War, when George Bush 41 was in the White House, and it's very apparent to everyone, really, that what happened was, in order to thank Israel for its cooperation, not firing back at Baghdad and Iraq while they were being pummeled by some Scud missiles that reached Tel Aviv and other places, Bush had to do something in recompense, and so he bullied, or pulled off bullying tactic, to get UN to rescind the racist label. And that's why I don't personally recognize the rescinding of the racist label by the United Nations. Okay. We really need to move on here. I'll let that news report percolate. It's 4:43 Pacific Standard Time here in Santa Cruz County, California. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org, broadcasting at 101.3 FM. Okay. Now, last week on the short 55-minute version of this program, we now go for an hour and 55 minutes, starting at 3 o'clock every Monday, I put forth, perhaps somewhat clumsily, the question of the idea that the Jews own everything in the world, that the Jews control everything, that they have all the money, that and that Israel, or that the U.S. government is effectively a puppet of the Israeli government and of American Jews. Okay, I was still clumsy the way I put that forth. I want to impress upon people with this broadcast and this article here that I'm not making the claim that Jews control everything. But you've all heard it, that that's the case. And by and large, I must agree that constitutes a great deal of the fodder for anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic charges, and anti-Semitic activity. Semites, by the way, refer to a racial and a language group, or for those who refute the existence of races among Homo sapien human beings, at the very least it refers to a language group, of which both Hebrew, the language of the Jews, and Arabic, the language of the Arabs and the Islamic world, are members. Hebrew, Arabic, Aramaic, and a number of other so-called minor languages. Somehow, about 150, 200 years ago, the sufferings of Jewish people at the hands of many non-Jews in Europe, in Russia, and in other places gave rise to the term of anti-Semitism. Although the term came to fall not as an umbrella for all the Semitic language groups and races, but for exclusively for Jews. And somehow, Jewish people making charges of anti-Semitism that they perceived against them, came to monopolize this term anti-Semitism. Well, I, as a Palestinian Arab American, wish to point out that I am a Semite, or half-Semitic, for those who want to split hairs. My father is Palestinian from Jerusalem. He was Christian. I was raised as a Christian. I was blessed to be born here in the United States, in California, in San Francisco, indeed. But that was me. My dad was born and raised in Jerusalem before the advent of the modern state of Israel. Okay, so we've established that I'm at least half Semitic, even though I'm not Jewish. I read to you an article by Ms. Allison Weir, who is the president of the Council for the International Interest, a former journalist and the founder of If Americans Knew, KNEW, a nonprofit organization that focuses on the Israel-Palestine conflict, specializing in statistical analysis. Weir writes and speaks widely about Israel-Palestine, with particular focus on media coverage. Her articles on the subject have been published in anthologies both in the U.S. and abroad, and in diverse online and print publications. She's given talks at numerous universities, including Harvard Law School, Stanford, University of California, Berkeley, Yale, etc., etc. And I think I'm going to go ahead and just read the whole thing to you again, because I only got halfway through it last time. I said I'd read the second half of it this week. Well, I will, but I'm going to read the first half first and then read the rest of it. Again, this is another please, I beg you, bear with me endeavor, as it is some 10 pages long. But it does address, in part, at least it begins to address, this notion that American Jews are economically powerful, and also powerful in terms of the reach of the media. And this does, according to Ms. Weir, have an effect on U.S. governmental relations with the government of Israel and with how the common American relates to the Israeli citizen. From website AllisonWeir.org, that's AllisonWeir.org, Allison Weir is one word, entitled The Empire Behind the World's Largest History Magazine Chain, How American History Magazine Censored Palestine, by Allison Weir, from Counterpunch Magazine, December 6th, 2012. This subsection is entitled The Wider History Group. That's wider, is W-E-I-D-E-R. Wider History Group. It all started out simply enough. The nonprofit Council for the National Interest, of which I am president, Ms. Weir is president, recently tried to buy an advertisement in American History magazine. The ad was to promote a new book by CNI's founder, Council for the National Interest, CNI, its founder, former Congressman Paul Findlay, offering discounted copies of the new book through the CNI website. The book, Speaking Out, A Congressman's Lifelong Fight Against Bigotry, Famine, and War, is a fascinating memoir of Findlay's 9 decades of life. It describes his Depression-era childhood, World War II service in the South Pacific Ocean, the South Pacific War Theater, experiences as an editor of a small-town Corn Belt newspaper, and 22 years as a congressman grappling with everything from farm issues to Vietnam to Israel-Palestine. The ad featured the cover of Findlay's book and four strong endorsements, including the following by Mr. Bill Moyers. Quote, "There is a place in America called Findlay Country, inspired by its founding father. The people who live there cherish principled politics, political coverage, and speaking truth to power, even when it hurts. Paul has given us a lively recollection of a robust and honorable life in public service, grounded in a patriot's devotion to the country he loves." End quote. American History Magazine refused to run our advertisement. In fact, advertising director Julie Kirschenbaum gratuitously informed us that they would not publish it in any of the 10 other U.S. history magazines owned by the same company. She said that the chain's chief executive officer and publisher, Mr. Eric Weider, had personally made the decision. The reason? The Council for the National Interest is allegedly, quote-unquote, anti-Semitic. In reality, CNI is a nonpartisan organization founded 20 years ago by highly principled former U.S. congressmen and diplomats. Our board members include several ambassadors. CNI provides in-depth, transparently sourced information on the history and current situation in Israel-Palestine, on U.S.-Middle East policies, and on their impact on American citizens. In line with our mission to work for U.S.-Middle East policies that serve the national interest, that represent the highest values of our founders and our citizens, and that work to sustain a nation of honor, decency, security, and prosperity. We oppose failed national policies that prolong the tragic violence in the Middle East, that place perceived Israeli interests over American ones, and that drain billions of dollars from the American economy. Although many Americans are unaware of this, Americans are closely connected to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We give well over $8 million per day to Israel, a state smaller than New Jersey. On average, Israelis receive 10,000 times more U.S. foreign aid per capita than other people throughout the world. 10,000 times, folks. And this costs us significantly more. Some analysts have placed the total cost at approximately $15 million per day. We feel that it is essential that Americans become thoroughly informed about this conflict, which has cost multitudes of lives and created potentially catastrophic instability in the Middle East for over 60 years. Yet, because the owners of what may be the world's largest publisher of history magazines are partial to Israel, readers of 11 key American history magazines will neither be permitted to read about Findlay's autobiography nor even see the CNI name. Now, troubled by this censorship, I phoned publisher Eric Weider to discuss his decision. When he failed to return my calls, I began to research his company. Who are the people deciding what information could or cannot reach American history fans? While many people might picture the publishers of these magazines as scholars dedicated to the disinterested study of history, I discovered a very different situation. And this is Allison Weir talking. Instead, I found out that the magazines are part of a massive and lucrative empire based on bodybuilding and related products, an empire that has been investigated and convicted. Yes, for those of you with good ears, you can hear my... Okay, just a reminder, folks, from my cell phone, which I failed to update. Sorry for the interruption. I'll get back here. Instead, I found out that the magazines are part of a massive and lucrative empire based on bodybuilding and related products. An empire that has been investigated and convicted for using false claims to sell potentially dangerous, quote, nutritional supplements, and for publishing, quote, obscene magazines run by powerful people with powerful friends in high places who oppose the regulation of such supplements. Not the profile readers might expect, though publisher Wider, Mr. Wider, is now interviewed in the media as an expert on American history, one whose commentary supports the alleged necessity of American wars in the Middle East. New subsection, the Wider History Group's 11 magazines. The entity known as the Wider History Group publishes several history-related websites and 11 magazines. They are America's Civil War, American History, Aviation History, Armchair General, British Heritage, Civil War Times. I take that to mean the American Civil War. Military History, MHQ, the Quarterly Journal of Military History, Vietnam, Wild West, and World War II. The 11 magazines of the Wider History Group. Wider History Publishing Group. All but one of these publications were originally independent magazines. Some of them are decades old. Civil War Times has been around for half a century. American History since the 1960s. In 2006, the Wider History Group took over them all, acquiring them from another magazine chain. Not everyone was pleased with the change. Civil War Times editor Chris Lewis eventually resigned over the new direction the magazines were taking. He circulated an email explaining why he had decided to leave. Quote, "I am a lifelong reader and care a great deal about this publication, which is why I cannot be a part of the new direction that the magazines in this group are either already going in or will be going in soon. There is no respect here anymore for history, historians, or the core audience," end quote. Before the next section, let me remind you, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz County, California, run by the Free Radio Santa Cruz collectively. Broadcasting on 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org. That's F-R-E-A-K radio.org. Don't forget those donation, folks, and please keep an eye open for a new studio for us that we can afford more easily and accessibly and perhaps expand the operation, roughly 150 square feet. Please, no more than $300 a month. Keep your eyes open. Use your imagination. Maybe somebody has a huge living room that they're living to afford us. Based on an agreement, of course. And let's have a brief musical interlude here. Okay, musical intermission is over. Back to Allison Weir's article entitled "The Empire Behind the World's Largest History Magazine Chain," subtitled "How American History Magazine Censored Palestine." I haven't even gotten to that part yet. Okay, continuing. Next subheading. The empire that owns American history. And I believe they are not referring to American history per se. Or I believe they're not referring to the American History magazine, but literally American history. The empire that owns American history. The Wider History Group is a wholly owned subsidiary of Wider Health and Fitness Incorporated, which in turn is part of a larger Wider empire valued at $1 billion. The Widers were initially Canadian promoters who were known for largely creating the business of modern bodybuilding and its multitude of spin-off products. Brothers Ben and Joe Wider founded the empire 70 years ago. Ben later said that his original dream had been to be an architect, but that anti-Semitism had prevented this. Today, the principals are Joe Wider and Ben Wider's son, Eric. By the 1990s, the Wider Empire consisted of numerous brands and over 1,000 products. These include bodybuilding extravaganzas and competitions, a wide range of exercise equipment and purported body-enhancing devices, diverse publications, and a dazzling collection of, quote, fitness products and, quote, nutritional supplements, pills, powders, potions, and programs. The latter are a large part of the Wider Empire's money-making machine, the programs. They include weight gain products, weight loss products, muscle health products, etc. An example is Wider Body Shaper Diet and Energy Tablets for mental energy, quote, for mental energy and thermogenesis, end quote. While many people purchase Wider products, and some may deliver fully on their extravagant promises, federal investigations have found that a number of them do not. Wider merchandise has been the subject of a number of federal investigations, and Wider companies have been found guilty of fraud on several occasions. The Widers have worked to prevent legislation that would have further restricted the kinds of supplements sold by their companies. In the 1970s, United States postal officials found the Wider company had engaged in false claims involving a number of its products. Slimmer Shake, also known as Wider's weight loss formula XR7. Slim Guard, Joe Wider's crash weight gain formula number 7. 5-minute waist slimmer plan, 5-minute body shaper plan, and Beauty Breast of Paris, a device which promised to enlarge breasts. In 1981, the FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission, found the company had made fraudulent claims regarding its Slim Quick formula. The FTC also concluded that under some circumstances, the weight loss concoction could be significantly dangerous to health and required the company to add warning labels. In 1986, the FTC forced Wider Health and Fitness Incorporated to refund the purchase price paid by those who bought its anabolic megapack or dynamic life essence pills. In 2000, Wider Nutritional International settled an FTC complaint involving false claims for FenCal and was required to pay $400,000, a sum unlikely to have caused much pain to a billion-dollar operation. Okay, obviously we're beginning to stray from the topic at hand, the question of whether or not Jews, American Jews or Israelis, have undue power or media influence in the U.S. But now we're getting to the part that's more critical regarding this aspect of the empire, of the wider publishing empire and bodybuilding empire. Next section, an empire built on bodybuilding. The foundation of the wider empire was originally the business of bodybuilding, and this still remains a significant part of its focus. According to anthropologist Alan Klein, the wider's own, quote, the largest conglomerate of bodybuilding products in the world. The Widers founded the International Federation of Bodybuilders, IFBB, in 1946, and Joe Wider has been called the czar, C-Z-A-R, of bodybuilding. In a 1998 book, former Mr. Universe Bob Paris, remember that name, Bob Paris, stated that the Widers, quote, control bodybuilding. To learn more about bodybuilding, see the montage at the IFBB Pro website. As of this writing, just a couple of weeks ago, the Wider History magazines have a banner ad on the site. Paris, Bob Paris, writes that the Widers would pressure the most promising young bodybuilders into signing contracts with them. Anyone who publicly criticized or questioned any of the policies of the IFBB or its officers, Paris wrote, could be suspended. The officers seem to have mostly been the Widers themselves or their friends. Paris states, quote, the Wider brothers claim that the IFBB and the Wider companies are separate and completely unrelated. Only the most naive fool would believe that. They should simply say that, yes, they are completely linked. But of course, if they did that, then nasty words like monopoly or conflict of interest would start getting thrown around, dot, 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 end quote. Another writer reported that a connection to the Wider spelled success for an aspiring bodybuilder, but for a price. Beginning of quotation here, from that point on, the bodybuilder's career is owned by the Wider Corporation, end quote. The Arnold Schwarzenegger connection gets interesting. Listen up. It was the Widers who discovered future movie star / California governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and brought him to America from Austria, I believe. They got the aspiring bodybuilder an apartment, bought him a car, and crafted him into a celebrity, tutoring him on everything from his exercise regimen and real estate investments to how to wear his hair. Joe Wider told the New York Times, "We created Arnold." The Wider supported Schwarzenegger for California governor and remained close to him. Schwarzenegger declared July 9, 2007, Joe Wider Day. As we will see, there is a further connection, but first we need to examine another aspect of the Wider business machine. The Wider empire has also long included an array of magazines, mostly focused on bodybuilding and fitness. A few in past years seem to have crossed the line into lewdness, and Joe Wider was twice indicted for producing and distributing obscene literature. In 1957, he was placed on a 5-year probation. In 2003, the Widers sold this line of publications, the more obscene ones had been abandoned, to American Media, which also publishes the National Enquirer and Star tabloids, for $350 million. This was less than a clean break, however, as the businesses seemed to have arranged a mutually beneficial association, some of it apparently touching on Arnold Schwarzenegger. Joe Wider remained in charge of the magazines under American Media, while American Media director David Pecker signed a contract to co-sponsor major bodybuilding contests with the Widers. With this new Wider-Pecker alliance came a change in how American Media's tabloids covered Schwarzenegger. who was then running for California governor and whose previous steroid use, sexual affairs, one allegedly with a minor, bullying, groping incidents, etc., were the kind of fodder that often fuels tabloids. According to an article in the San Jose Mercury News, that's San Jose, California, tabloids starry-eyed for Schwarzenegger by Dion Nissenbaum. Pecker promised Wider that his tabloids would, quote, lay off Schwarzenegger and, quote, not dig up any dirt on the gubernatorial candidate. In fact, following its deal with Wider, American media now seem to be promoting Schwarzenegger. The Mercury News reported that American media produced a 120-page glossy magazine called Arnold the American Dream, quote, crammed with flattering photographs that auspiciously hit the streets just as Schwarzenegger headed into the final lap of his campaign for governor. The next year, after Schwarzenegger became governor, Pecker made him executive editor of Flex and Muscle and Fitness, promising him an estimated $8 million over the next 5 years for helping to, quote, further the business objectives, end quote, of the company, according to the Los Angeles Times. If anyone wondered how a sitting governor of one of the nation's largest states would have time for such a position, Advertising Age reported that this was, quote, a largely honorary position, and according to a Schwarzenegger aide, quote, would only take up a nominal amount of the governor's time, end quote. The following year, Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed legislation that would have cracked down on the use of supplements by student athletes. A number of these supplements have been tied to serious health consequences. The medical community has warned that potential health effects include liver cancer, heart disease, impaired testicular function, and neurodegenerative effects. Following Schwarzenegger's veto, critics accused him of a conflict of interest, and supplements constituted a large portion of the advertising in the magazines that were paying him so generously for his work. Advertising Age also made a point of noting that Schwarzenegger's veto of legislation that would have regulated supplements, quote, highlighted Mr. Schwarzenegger's decades-long relationship with Joe Wider, the godfather of the supplement business. That's what the Advertising Age said. While Schwarzenegger was governor, and since, he has also worked to promote Israel. In a speech at an event at the Israeli consulate, Schwarzenegger proclaimed, I love Israel. When I became governor, Israel was the first country that I visited. I've had the pleasure of being there many times, Schwarzenegger said, and have seen it from a bodybuilding point of view, from a tourist's point of view, from an entertainer's point of view, from the governor's point of view, forming trade relationships with Israel in order. I have been a longtime friend of Israel, end quote. Next subsection, the Wider Foundations. The Wider Empire is not limited to the U.S. The Widers have promoted bodybuilding and Wider products worldwide. There are now IFBB groups in 182 countries, and there are photos of Wider with diverse government officials, including Ronald Reagan, Yasser Arafat, and Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin goes back a ways. For many of you who have not heard the name, Menachem Begin is a former prime minister of the state of Israel, and he was also a high officer, probably a general. Oh, indeed, I think he was probably the founding general of the Irgun partisan group, which beat up on a lot of Palestinian Arabs and killed them in order to found the state of Israel. Continuing, multimillionaires often set up tax-deductible foundations, and the Widers have created several. The Ben Wider Foundation has donated gymnasiums around the world as part of their bodybuilding outreach, including in Israel and Palestine. Ben endowed what is now known as the Ben Wider Jewish Community Center in Montreal, and also supported two Lubavitch institutions, a charismatic and sometimes controversial branch of Orthodox Judaism. He, Ben, was an admirer of Lubavitch head, Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, a religious leader who is a major force in Israel. Israeli leaders, including Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Rabin, and Benjamin Netanyahu, all prime ministers, would often visit him when they were in the U.S. and seek his advice. The widely revered but controversial leader, Schneerson, was held by some followers to be the Messiah. Less widely known is the fact that he made statements that Jews are a different and superior species to non-Jews. That's Rabbi Menachem Schneerson. There is also a Joe Wider Foundation. Joe Wider is CEO, and Eric Wider has been chief financial officer and is currently president. That's Ben's son, Eric. This has given several large grants to a Los Angeles-based organization called American Friends of Aish HaTorah. Aish HaTorah is an Israeli organization that opposes Jewish assimilation and promotes Israel in the United States. It has been connected to the production of pseudo-documentaries promoting Islamophobia that were distributed in the U.S. Journalist Jeffrey Goldberg, a strong Israel proponent himself, calls Aish, quote, just about the most fundamentalist movement in Judaism today. Its operatives flourish in the radical belt of Jewish settlements just south of Nablus in the northern West Bank, and their outposts across the world propagandize on behalf of a particularly sterile, sexist, and revanchist brand of Judaism. Among its multitude of activities, Aish is a program to create and equip advocates for Israel on American campuses. These Hasbara Fellows, as they're termed, operate on over 120 campuses. Joe Wider is one of six. North American chairman of the Jerusalem Fund of Aish HaTorah, this focuses on bringing political leaders, corporate executives, investors, and entertainment personages on private trips to Israel to increase their support for Israel. And again, I am reading from an article written by Allison Weir, president of the Council for the National Interest, released in Counterpunch magazine December 6th, entitled The Empire Behind the World's Largest History Magazine Chain. Subtitled, How American History Magazine Censored Palestine. Next subsection. Wider Empire acquires history magazines. The same year the Wider sold their muscle and fitness magazines, they began their foray into history magazines. Working out of the same San Fernando offices, they published the first in their new chain, Armchair General, the following year. A Reuters story on the launch announced. The Los Angeles publisher that made its fortune on the dreams of armchair muscle men everywhere now wants to get Americans pumped up on a new avocation, becoming armchair generals. Eric Wider, whose family firm sold mainstream America on bodybuilding and Arnold Schwarzenegger, on Tuesday launched Armchair General, an interactive war magazine aimed at selling military history to the masses, end quote. The Wider's market analysis showed a potential readership of, quote, more than 35 million lifelong devotees. Eric Wider, who had moved to California from Canada many years before, became an American citizen around this time. While Eric Wider appears to be a genuine history buff, He apparently has no training or degree in history. He has a master's degree in business administration and has spent most of his life working in his family's business empire, mostly in its bodybuilding and, quote, nutritional supplements divisions. A Business Week. Okay. A Business Week CV lists the following positions: President and Chief Executive Officer of Wider Health and Fitness Incorporated, President of the Joe Wider Foundation, Chairman of Schiff Nutritional International Incorporated, that's Schiff, S-C-H-I-F-F, Director of a number of public and private companies in the United States and Canada, including NutraPeak Incorporated, Hillside Investment Management Incorporated, Oregon Recovery Systems and Life Science Holdings, and Wider Health and Fitness, a subsidiary of Schiff Nutrition International Incorporated. Nevertheless, TV and radio shows hosted by such people as Tucker Carlson and Al Rantel feature Eric Wider as, quote, an historian, to provide what is promoted as expert commentary on current events in today's wars. Wider is an engaging speaker, but the history he cites is highly selective and is used to support military action in the Middle East. On the Rantel show, he suggested that American presidents should ignore polls indicating what Americans want and instead, quote, instill the will to fight. Next subsection, the Wider History Group and Israel-Palestine. A survey of the publication's website, HistoryNet, shows most articles and commentaries regarding Israel-Palestine to be Israel-centric. They often extol the Israeli military. The publication's articles during and following Israel's 2008 to 2009 massive attack on Gaza largely consisted of cheering Israel's victory. The articles failed to mention that this allegedly proud conquest, which, by the way, was fueled by massive American money and weaponry, was over one of the world's poorest populations, largely thanks to Israeli policies, like the ones that I was telling you before, folks, before I began this article. Continuing, they also failed to mention that Palestinians have no navy, no air force, and no real army, and that their resistance groups are minimally armed. When Israel finally ended its three-week-long invasion of the densely populated enclave, during which Israeli forces had killed 14,000 Palestinians, 470 of them women and children, many others elderly men, a wider History Net article bemoaned Israel's decision, quote, to break off its punitive expedition into Gaza prematurely, despite the superb performance of the Israeli Defense Force, end quote. And perhaps a couple of things here. Let me try to clarify. Ms. Weir states that resistance groups in Gaza are minimally armed. Obviously, she's referring to small arms and not to the missiles. I will admit that. That's my interpretation anyway. Also, you may recall that I mentioned some 20 or 21 Israelis have been killed by those rockets in the past two or three years. Less fewer than two dozen Israeli deaths compared to 14,000 Palestinians, 470 of them women and children, many others elderly men, in the course of a few days, actually, in a so-called war that lasted 3 weeks. Continuing with the article, the History Net articles emphasized Israel's need, quote, to defend itself, end quote, against Palestinian rockets, but they failed to report that these are largely small homemade projectiles and that Palestinian resistance forces began firing them only after Israel had already invaded Gaza numerous times and killed and injured hundreds of Palestinians of all ages. They are not referring, she is not referring here to the Gaza invasion of 08-09 that she just spoke of. Again, the HistoryNet articles emphasize Israel's need to defend itself, quote-unquote, against Palestinian rockets, but they fail to report that these are largely small homemade projectiles and that Palestinian resistance forces began firing them only after Israel had invaded Gaza numerous times before the big invasion here and killed and injured hundreds of Palestinians of all ages. They also neglected to mention that before the invasion, these rockets had killed a total of approximately 19 Israelis ever. The total fatalities from Gaza rockets through November 2012 are 29. So we have an updated figure of 29. During the same time, according to the Israeli organization B'Tselem, human rights organization B'Tselem, Israeli forces killed over 4,000 Gazans. The articles erroneously claim that Israel invaded Gaza because the Palestinian Hamas group had violated a ceasefire agreement with Israel. In reality, it was Israel that had violated the ceasefire three times, killing seven Palestinians before some Palestinian groups then resumed rocket fire. Finally, the wider articles failed to inform readers that Israel had been planning the invasion for 6 months ahead of time, as revealed by a Jewish Chronicle article applauding Israel's effective Hasbara, or propaganda, campaign during the operation. So here it is, an article in the Jewish Chronicle applauding Israel's propaganda campaign while this invasion was going on. Eric Weider himself has occasionally posted pro-Israel comments on the site's forums. In one, he responds to a member's posting about Israeli fighters flying over Gaza several times a day to create sonic booms in order to frighten the people below who would dive for shelter. Weider comments, quote, "Next thing you know, the Israelis will start talking excessively loudly!" Exclamation point. "Their cruelty knows no bounds," end quote. In another thread, Ryder writes, "It is important to recognize that there is a lot of anti-Semitic," apparently he doesn't even know how to spell anti-Semitic, "inspired anti-Israel sentiment in the world," end quote. Eric Weider and George Washington. Eric Weider expresses a great admiration for George Washington and has begun a petition to restore his birthday, his exclusively George Washington's birthday, as a federal holiday. He has written, "If I have a historical role model, I would say that I most admire George Washington, and I do my best to conduct myself in a way that he and my father would approve of." And my father is in parentheses. I'm not sure what that means. I mean, who exactly put it in parentheses? Mr. Weider or Ms. Weir? It's 4:31, 16:31 hours Pacific Standard Time. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Returning to article. Yet Weider seems to be violating one of Washington's major recommendations. In his farewell address, Washington warned against a, quote, "passionate attachment," end quote, to any foreign nation, saying that such attachments were, quote, "particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot." If Eric Weider looked at the CNI website when he decided to censor it from his 11 magazines, he saw prominently displayed on the home page a picture of the American forefather who he has called first in his heart. Under this, he saw an excerpt from his role model's famous speech in which Washington warned sympathy for the favorite nation, facilitating the illusion of an imaginary common interest in cases where no real common interest exists, and infusing into one of the enmities of the other, betrays the former into participation in the quarrels and wars of the latter without adequate inducement or justification. I'm going to read that quote from General and President George Washington again. Washington said, quote, "Sympathy for the favorite nation, facilitating the illusion of an imaginary common interest in cases where no real common interest exists, and infusing into one the enmities of the other, betrays the former into participation in the quarrels and wars of the latter without adequate inducements or justification," end quote. On our, the CNI homepage, Wider would have also seen a history article on the U.S.-Israel relationship that contains considerable new, somewhat explosive information. Much of this would quite likely be of interest to readers of American history magazines if they were allowed to learn of it. Final section of the article. Determining the future through controlling the past. You heard that right. I said determining the future through controlling the past. It is disturbing to find that a chain targeting American history enthusiasts is exploiting its considerable power in furtherance of a political agenda of such monumental significance. Multitudes of lives have been lost and destroyed in Middle East wars. Many thousands of them American. That's right. Many thousand Americans have died in Middle East wars. Israel is the core issue in the Middle East and key cause of hostility to the U.S. is a factor in the American economic crisis, is embedded in United States electoral politics, and plays a significant role in many aspects of American policy formation. It is essential that Americans become well-informed on Israel and on our relationship to it, says Ms. Weir. Author George Orwell's words capture the profound significance of the wider censorship within its history magazines. Quote, "Who controls the past controls the future." Or, in the words of someone who posted to an online bodybuilding forum about the wider's ownership of history publications, "Of course, if you control the writing of history, you gain power." The way to avoid a dangerously darkening future, I feel, is to free the past to full, open, and unfiltered inquiry. Our forefathers created freedom of the press because they rightly understood the necessity of a fully informed populace for the survival of our democratic republic. Ms. Wider ends her article by saying, and she puts in bold letters this sentence, "The only way to counter the manipulation of powerful media owners is to expose their actions widely and to demand better. I hope all those who love knowledge, who care about the United States, and who value the lives of others on the side of the world will help disseminate this information. It is time to stop allowing those who own the press to abuse their massive power." And again, the author, Allison Weir, is president of the Council for the National Interest and executive director of If Americans Knew. She can be reached at contact@ifamericansknew.org. I have used that If Americans Knew website to garner some information, which I believe to be highly reliable. It is very well sourced. You have sources of sources at If Americans Knew. And they have some rather alarming, even alarming to me, figures and statistics about the Israel Arab conflict. Folks, it's 4:37. You've got exactly 17 minutes to call me at 831-427-3772 or 469-3119. You want to call me an anti-Semite? As much as I despise the use of that word, as much as I despise true anti-Semitic activity, now's your chance. You got the guts? Call us here. I shall once again refresh my palate with a lovely beverage. Clear my throat. It is 4:38 p.m. This item's from an internet blog written by M.J. Rosenberg, Jewish. He is a former staff member of AIPAC, that is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Was a staff member of AIPAC, but now a fierce critic of that same outfit. He's in Washington, D.C. I'll give you his address after. This from his from M.J. Rosenberg's website, Media with Conscience. The non-existent, quote, Jewish lobby, end quote, declares war on Chuck Hagel, Friday, 21 December, by M.J. Rosenberg. The American Jewish Committee was the latest Jewish organization to enlist in the battle to prevent President Barack Obama from naming former Nebraska Senator Chuck Hagel to be Secretary of Defense. The onslaught is unprecedented. Never before has virtually the entire organized Jewish community combined to stop a presidential cabinet appointment because it deems the potential nominee insufficiently devoted to Israel. Again, the charge is insufficiently devoted to Israel. My emphasis. Continuing, of course, below the cabinet level, the lobby has been manning the barricades against critics of any Israeli government policies for decades. The onslaught against Hagel is unique, however, because the reason for it is not merely that he opposes the rush to war with Iran and favors negotiating an end to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The reason is because he dared to refer to the existence of the Israel lobby. He said this in 2008 in an interview with former State Department official Aaron Miller. Quote, Congress is an institution that does not inherently bring out a great deal of courage. This is Hagel talking. Most of the time, members play it safe and adopt an I'll support Israel attitude. AIPAC comes knocking with a pro-Israel letter and, quote, then you'll get 80 to 90 senators on it. I don't think I've ever signed one of the letters, end quote. Hagel continues, when someone would accuse him of not being pro-Israel because he didn't sign the letter, Hagel told me he responds, okay, I'll restart that again because this is the person, Mr. Rosenberg, talking. When someone would accuse him of not being pro-Israel because he didn't sign the letter, Hagel told me that he responds, quote, I didn't sign the letter because it was a stupid letter, end quote. Few legislators talk this way on the Hill. Hagel is a strong supporter of Israel and a believer in shared values. Quote, the Jewish lobby intimidates a lot of people up here. But as he puts it, I'm a United States senator. I'm not an Israeli senator. That quote will likely doom Hegel's candidacy, because if there is one institution that is considered untouchable, it is the Israel lobby and its power. Here is Wall Street Journal columnist Brett Stevens, a major neocon and Netanyahu supporter, on the implications of Hegel's remarks. Prejudice, like cooking, wine tasting, and other consummations, has an olfactory element. When Chuck Hagel, the former GOP senator from Nebraska, who is now a front runner to be the next Secretary of Defense, carries on about how, quote, the Jewish lobby intimidates a lot of people up here, unquote, the odor is especially ripe. Ripe because a, quote, Jewish lobby, as far as I'm aware, doesn't exist. No lesser authority is on the subject than John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt, authors of the book The Israel Lobby, have insisted the term Jewish lobby is inaccurate and misleading because the Israel lobby includes non-Jews like Christian Zionists, and because many Jewish Americans do not support the hardline policies favored by its most powerful elements, end quote. Right, because the word intimidates, ascribes to the so-called Jewish lobby powers that are at once vast, invisible, and malevolent, and because it suggests that legislators who adopt positions friendly to that lobby are doing so not from political conviction, but out of personal fear. Just what does that Jewish lobby have on them? Okay, now that's the end of Brett Stevens' remarks. Mr. Rosenberg continues in his article. In short, Hegel is an anti-Semite because he stated that the Jewish lobby both exists and, quote-unquote, intimidates. It is true that it is impolitic to use the term Jewish lobby rather than Israel lobby, although the very same people criticizing Hegel for using the former term, Jewish lobby, objected just as vehemently when Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer used the latter in their book on the subject. In any case, the term Jewish lobby is accurate when one refers to organizations like the American Jewish Committee or the Anti-Defamation League, etc. They're Jewish organizations and not AIPAC, the registered Israel lobby. As for the non-Jews and Christian Zionists that are supposedly part of the lobby, that is just silly, says Mr. Rosenberg. Having worked on Capitol Hill for 20 years, I can attest to the fact that the only voices that matter in Washington on this issue comes from Jews. The lobby contributes millions of dollars to candidates based on its determination of his or her devotion to Israel. No non-Jewish organization does that. The whole Christian Zionist thing is a joke and will be until John Hagee's Christians United for Israel starts pouring money into our campaigns and to both parties. Of course, the irony about the war on Hegel is that it has been launched against him because he says that the lobby acts as one to intimidate policymakers and legislators. And the lobby screams that there is no such thing as an organized lobby that does these things. And this is an article by M.J. Rosenberg entitled "The Non-Existent Jewish Lobby Declares War on Chuck Hegel" from 21 December. My goodness, that was last Friday. Fresh stuff. Continuing with article, here is a list, not comprehensive, of those who have enlisted in the campaign against Chuck Hegel. American Jewish Committee, the Anti-Defamation League, AIPAC, Commentary, Republican Jewish Coalition, the National Jewish Democratic Council, the Israel Project, the Zionist Organization of America, plus Bill Kristol, Jennifer Rubin, Fred Hyatt of the Washington Post, and Ed Koch, I believe referring to the former mayor of New York City, Ed Koch. But I might be wrong about that. This list is only partial. Virtually all Jewish organizations, politicians, and media figures are under pressure to condemn Hegel, and many of them will. To its credit, J Street is supporting Hegel, and Israel Policy Forum has long been in the Hegel camp. Israel Policy Forum honored Hegel for his support of Israel's security in 2008. But the others are all marching in lockstep to destroy a senator, a war hero, highly decorated Marine, Mr. Hegel, and one of the most thoughtful public officials on foreign policy matters. I say destroy because the charge of anti-Semitism can and does destroy. If Obama decides not to pick Hegel, and he probably will decide so, to not pick him, this great American will be tarred forever by the charge. The good news is that the lobby will be shown to be precisely what its critics say it is. It is an organized machine dedicated to the interest of the Israeli right that uses its power to ensure that no one in our government ever challenges Israel's government on anything. Of course, it is unlikely that the media will even report the story. In the wake of last week's horrors in Connecticut, Newtown, Connecticut, the media is talking almost endlessly about the sickening power of the gun lobby. But the gun lobby doesn't come close to AIPAC's power to intimidate. After all, as I said, everyone discusses the NRA and what should be done about it. Virtually no one in the media discusses the Israel lobby. If Hegel is rejected by Obama, don't expect David Gregory, Rachel Maddow, or any of the rest of them to explain why. They can't. They are afraid. But they're not afraid of the NRA. Doesn't that tell you something? Fortunately, there is the blogosphere. Again, most of the major bloggers are intimidated into silence on the lobby, but not all. Where the most prominent voice of all, former A New Republic editor, Andrew Sullivan, does have the guts to speak out. He says, quote, "Like a kabuki dancer, here it comes. The usual vile insinuations. The usual call for the greater Israel lobby to kill a nomination because a U.S. senator actually believes his job is to care first about the security and interests of the United States, not greater Israel. The reflexive equation of opposition to the Netanyahu administration, or the settlements, or the Gaza wars with pure bigotry. The phrases, the odor is especially ripe, are as preeningly self-righteous as they are toxic. You are not allowed, for example, to note that well-financed, organized Washington lobbies intimidate lawmakers." And here's a kind of side note. We're still in the Andrew Sullivan quotation here. The word intimidates ascribes to the so-called Jewish lobby powers that are at once vast, invisible, and malevolent. And because it suggests that legislators who adopt positions friendly to that lobby are doing so not from political conviction, but out of personal fear. Sullivan continues, "It's interesting to read this familiar, exhausted, ridiculous whine in the context of our current discussion about the National Rifle Association. The NRA is routinely called the gun lobby, and it is described in exactly the same terms as AIPAC, vast, invisible, and malevolent. Because it is precisely as effective and relentless and as fanatical as AIPAC in wielding money, networking, and political pressure in attaining its legislative goals. But we are forbidden from calling AIPAC what it is, the way we call the NRA what it is, because telling the truth about it has been stigmatized as anti-Semitism. Mr. Sullivan concludes, it's a useful ruse for bullies like the Greater Israel Lobby. It's also an insult to those who have suffered and been murdered by actual anti-Semites. But for utopian fanatics, if casually calling honorable public servants anti-Semites helped them retain their dream of a Greater Israel, so be it. Which is why the president, if indeed he is contemplating an appointment for the Nebraska Republican, should not listen to the AIPAC thugs. He should what is right for this country and not any others. Returning to the rest of Mr. Rosenberg's article, Sullivan leaves out one thing. The Israel lobby is bad for the Jews. It suggests that Jewish Americans put the interests of a foreign country first, which is a damnable lie. As every poll shows, Jewish Americans, not only do not vote based on Israel, they are not overly Israel-centered at all. Moreover, those of us who do deeply care about Israel, although not more than we care about our own country, believe that the best way to support Israel is to work for peace with the Palestinians and to oppose war with Iran, just as Chuck Hagel does. The lobby knows that, but it has higher goals. Making our government tremble, supporting Benjamin Netanyahu, and scaring Jews into donating more money to their respective organizations. In short, the lobby is bad for America, but it's worse for Jews. Mr. Rosenberg ends his article with the sentence, "How dare these hacks and lobbyists jeopardize our future in the best home Jews have ever had?" He's talking about the United States, of course. M.J. Rosenberg. This is entitled, The non-existent, quote-unquote, Jewish lobby declares war on Chuck Hagel. Media from Conscience. Copyright 2012 M.J. Rosenberg. All rights reserved. He is at Post Office Box 76283, Washington, D.C., 20013. You may email him at mjayvergblog@gmail.com. Okay, kids, here we are at 4:55, which continues to be the official end of this show, Mideast Madness. And for some strange reason, it seems to me that I'm still only doing a 55-minute show. I'm going to have to expand to 3 hours. Well, maybe not that, but you will be hearing at least two or three repetitions of this program until dawn tomorrow, and maybe even more. I'm Ren Tawil. The show is Mideast Madness here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Please send your donations to FRSC Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Please donate, folks. Look for a new studio for us, 150 square feet, more or less. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week now at 3 p.m. And Betty, I know you're out there. I'm disappointed that you didn't call me. Take care, everyone.
under the tree.
Well,
smell
leave the
that
door
cinnamon.
Open the door all the way so we can
and
see if he comes in.
And those sugar plums. Something's up the chimney hole, and Satan is his name.
Yeah.
Santa, I mean.
Otherwise, gosh. I guess we have to wait till Santa comes, Dave.
Beloved Santa. I have wanted
well, put
to
put your bag down for a minute.
Besides,
he's always so ready to like
me.
Be
Santa for so long.